Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode originally came out on March 4th, 2009. Starting us off in DC is Superman World of New Krypton number 1. What did you think of this one, Bob?
I was expecting to like it a lot more than I actually did, and I tried really hard to kind of put my finger on what about it. I didn't dislike it. I mean, it was an okay issue. It set up some interesting concepts, you know, the Kryptonian guilds and how Kal is going to adapt to those. I liked the reveal on the last page, you know, that has me wanting to come back, and I'll definitely get the series, but something about it, and maybe it's down to like the art, you know, I'm just something about the art, and there's nothing wrong with the art, but there's something about it that's just not clicking with me.
The art is good, but it's got what I would kind of describe as an indie art feel to it. There's something about kind of that mid-level art on an average independent superhero book that in some places is just a little off.
Now, it's better than the art on the next book we're going to talk about, New Avengers The Reunion. I mean, it blows that art away. So I don't want to, you know, that art was like kind of actively, how did that art even end up in a published Marvel comic, in my opinion? So it was competent, but, you know, like there's two ends. Maybe I can put it this way. You know, like when you have the over-rendered art with all the scratchy little lines and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah.
This one, it's almost like it was too minimalistic in many places where there were maybe too few lines or something. And I don't know, because it's not everywhere.
I was going to say, I would say it's a little uneven, because there are a couple of places where I thought the art in this was really good. There are a couple of other places where I felt it was just a little bit lacking, a little rough in a few places, a little lacking in detail in a few places. But, I mean, overall, I liked the art. I didn't have any major problems with it. One of the things artistically that did stand out for me is how, with Superman's S emblem, how that was kind of a raised and had a three-dimensionality to it that it normally doesn't.
Yeah, maybe pulling that off of the movie.
Could be. I mean, it works. It looks nice. Overall,
I hadn't even noticed that, but now that you pointed out to me, it's like kind of sticking out like a sore thumb.
Sorry
maybe
about that.
Was like, No, I mean, and maybe that's something subliminally that was bugging me about it.
Could be.
You know, but just something about it just seemed off somehow. The other thing, you know, now that I'm looking at it, is like the treads on the bottom of Superman's boots, like, you know, like Jim Lee draws on the bottom of Batman's boots, and normally they're smooth bottoms.
Well, this comes down to DC not having model sheets. You know, the detail on the bottom of the boots is up for grabs. What Superman's belt buckle looks like varies from artist to artist. You know, I would like some consistency there, some standardization. But to me, that's not something that usually bothers me, and it certainly didn't really bug me here.
Yeah, I don't want to be nitpicky about it. I mean, it's just, that's the kind of stuff, though, that when I think about it is kind of like maybe subliminally hitting me. Another thing when I look at it is Allura looks way young. I mean, they weren't in suspended animation on New Krypton. I mean, I don't think on Krypton when they were in the bottle. I mean, they were still functioning. She looks like Supergirl, pretty much. I mean, she doesn't look like old enough the way she's drawn.
Agreed.
And I'm also just getting a little bit tired of the, you know, Allura as a megalomaniac plot device. That just never really sat there. I mean, they're going with it. You know, it's kind of like the plot device that's driving this forward, but I'm just not seeing it.
Overall, I really enjoyed this issue. You know, I liked how they had the different guilds and how the look for some of those different guilds kind of, you know, harkens back to the different versions of Kryptonians we've gotten over the years. You know, how the Science Guild is kind of the John Byrne era, you know, Krypton. Mm-hmm. The Artist Guild is kind of more the Silver Age-ish sort of a thing and stuff like that. You know, and just the nature of the guilds and their society I thought was kind of cool. The whole bit of some of these Kryptonians having to learn how to use the superpowers was a nice, you know, aspect to the story. Didn't necessarily jive with what we'd seen in the previous story arc, where it seemed like all the Kryptonians knew how to, you know, kick butt and take names. Whereas here, a couple of them are, you know, flying into walls and stuff like that. But, you know, 100,000 Kryptonians, it makes sense you're only going to pull the ones who are actually, you know, the more athletic, if you will, to go fight on Earth. So, I mean, all of that kind of worked. One thing that, you know, I'm a little puzzled by, but I'm sure is going to be a plot point throughout the series, is there are these people in robes with kind of glowing faces or whatever, or glowing bodies. And, you know, we see a couple of them on the page right before the staple, and in the scene with Superman and Allura, there's one of them there. And I'm like, okay, who are these and what's up with that?
I'm figuring there's some kind of religion guild.
If it was just the way they were dressed, yeah, but the whole glowing aspect is kind of, you know, what's got me puzzled. Or curious, I should say. And what I liked about this issue is they gave a good, quick thumbnail overview of aspects of Kryptonian culture and of what some of the major, you know, points of contention are going to be for the characters throughout this series. You know, Superman's going to have a hard time with this kind of a caste society. You know, so that's going to be a source of tension. The whole bit with Zod, his aunt, all that kind of stuff. You know, I thought this was a really fun issue. I enjoyed it. That having been said, you know, I would have liked to have had just a little bit more in this issue. You know, the fight scene near the end felt a little gratuitous. It made sense, but
with Nan?
Yeah, with Nan.
Yeah, I thought that was a little forced.
So, you know, I'm curious where they're going with this. I'm looking forward to the ride. I mean, to me, this was a good, solid, you know, story. I gave it a 4.
I give it a 3. And, you know, maybe it's just that it's suffering in my mind because I was loving the Geoff Johns Superman stuff so much the last couple of arcs that this just doesn't measure up to that.
If this had been Geoff Johns and who was the artist on that? That was
Gary Frank.
Gary Frank, yeah. You know, if it had been done by those two, odds are this would have been a 5 for both of us. I mean, those guys are knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I totally expected this to fall a little shy of the mark there.
I think it'll grow on me. I just think that right now, the whole setup for the thing just seems a little contrived to me. And they're just, you know, doing a lot of stuff. I mean, in the last couple of issues that, you know, how he made the decision to, you know, leave Earth and come here. And it's like that whole thing, it sounds more like an editorial mandate of, like, what we have to do with the character than something that is naturally, organically flowing out of the story. But
yeah,
that's just me.
Well, I mean, to me, some of what I liked was just the little touches where everybody's got kind of their family crests and stuff, you know, as insignias on their outfits and stuff like that.
I liked that. I mean, again, I liked the guilds. I liked some of the ideas, but just something about it didn't sit just right with me.
No, that's fair. You know, like I said, I'm looking forward to the rest of the run. Should be entertaining. So I hope it I hope it stays at least this quality and hopefully gets a little bit better. I mean, with James Robinson and Greg Rucka working on it, on the writing, I have high hopes on there.
Yeah, I would expect the writing to stay, you know. And like I said, I'll expect it to grow on me. But it for the most part, I believe, is just paling in comparison to the John's Frank stuff that just happened.
Now, and again, I can see that. But, I mean, I think, you know, the Superman and the Legion of Superheroes and the Brainiac stuff, some of that was some of the best Superman stuff we've had in a heck of a long time. So, to me, this is as good or better than kind of the average Superman stuff we've had over the last few decades. But, again, I totally see where you're coming from, where it doesn't quite measure up to, you know, what we've seen over the last year or two in some of these books. But that's the problem following a really strong couple of arcs from solid creators. It, mm-hmm. No matter how good you are, you may not measure up.
Right.
So let's see. That was 22 pages for $2.99.
Standard 13.6 cents a page.
I hope we can stick with that for a bit longer. I'm starting to wonder.
Well, I mean, DC is introducing the co-feature concept that was up on Newsarama, where they're going to be putting backup features, which kind of harken back to the old days when you'd have like an Elongated Man story in the back of the Flash, or, you know, even like Firestorm for a while moved into the back of
Firestorm and Dr. Fate were in there. Yeah, they did that quite a bit in the 80s. But,
yeah.
I mean, there's a difference between doing it at a 50-cent cover price versus a $3, you know, 99 cover price.
All I'm saying is that, you know, DC is at least, while I don't like seeing books get raised to $3.99, they're at least putting the extra content in. So what they're saying is that, okay, they're having Booster Gold, and as a book, they're going to raise it to $3.99, but they're going to put an extra however many, I'm assuming like 8 extra pages in it, of Blue Beetle. And Teen Titans are going to put Ravager in it. And Doom Patrol, which is a new book, they're going to have Metal Men in as a backup. So it'll be like those Jim Starlin books that are the $3.99, but they're more story pages. So, you know, the price per page stays in line. Now, it's up to somebody on whether they want to pay the $3.99, but at least you're getting extra story pages, and I respect that DC's trying to still hold that line when Marvel's kind of thrown that out the window. As the next one we're going to talk about, the New Avengers, the Reunion number 1, is a 22-page story for $3.99. There's nothing extra in here. It's 18.1 cents per page.
Yeah, no, I do agree that DC's at least trying to give more for the money, as to, you know, whether that more content equates to better value or not. You know, it's for each individual to decide.
Sure.
But, I mean, you're right. Here we've got, in this thing, 22 pages by an artist that I don't think is top-notch. Not bad, but I mean, it was decent art. But, you know, $4 for 22 pages of story, I was a little disappointed by that. I mean, there wasn't even the pretense of any kind of extra feature or anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even like a, you know, History of Mockingbird, you know, kind of, you know, thing that they slap in the back for a few pages. It's just, here you go.
Well, and the irony is, Hawkeye and Mockingbird saga kind of feature at the end would have made sense, because Mockingbird hasn't really been seen for like the last 20 years or something. And she was killed off in the 80s, I think.
Yeah. The West Coast Avengers, right?
Yeah, so I mean, that predates a lot of current comic book readers, I think.
Yeah, predates a lot of them knowing how to read or even being alive.
That's what I meant, yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Hawkeye and Mockingbird. You know, glad to see Mockingbird back. And, you know, I thought this was a good story and decent art. But there were just a few things here and there where I think a few of the decisions they made, you know, I would not have made, is what it came down to. And part of it was as simple as they updated Mockingbird's costume. I would have kept her in the classic one because I think that would have given her a bit of a kind of a retro feel and really kind of played up that whole lost time aspect that she's got going now, you know, having been captured by the Skrulls and out of pocket for, you know, years or however long in the Marvel Universe. Now, one thing I will say is while the art was serviceable, it was certainly not the highlight of the book. To me, the highlight of the book was some of the characterization. The interplay between Hawkeye and Cap, I thought was really well done, and I really enjoyed that. Now, and
I find that very interesting because one of the notes that I had down was that I thought that the banter between Clint and Bucky or slash Cap, as well as Clint and Bobby, just didn't flow at all for me. It just seemed forced and not natural as I was reading it.
Could it have used a better polish? Certainly. Is it along the lines of what we're getting over in Cap with Brubaker and stuff? Certainly not. Could this have been better? I mean, yeah, I agree with that. But to me, it played well. You know, Hawkeye basically telling Bucky, hey, you know, I was offered the shield first. You know, that kind of a thing. I mean, it went back to the classic kind of friction between Hawkeye and Cap and just... Certainly it was the other Cap, but, you know, that dynamic there that I miss. And this had kind of a new spin to it, and it was fun. It was enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
That having been said, I mean, I totally see where you're coming from, because the creative team here is doing an okay job. But, again, imagine if this was, you know, Brubaker and, you know, one of the artists we've had on Cap lately or something like that. This could have been a much better comic.
I go back to my editor kind of thing that I talk about maybe too much, but this is something where, who is the editor on this?
Editor
Janine Schaefer. You know, it's like, what was Janine doing? You know, like a Grey's Anatomy reference, really. Hawkeye, he's the kind of guy who'd sit around watching Grey's Anatomy. I don't get that. And then he'd be making that as a reference to his wife who has been out of, you know, time for, I mean, they self-admit it. Oh, yeah, you missed that completely. But it's like, I can't see Hawkeye making that reference in the first place. I can't see Hawkeye not knowing what On Your Six means, you know, I mean, for as long as he's been heroing and the people he hangs around with, you know, Cap and Iron Man and all this, not knowing that means behind you, really?
I didn't.
You know, and they make a big deal out of it, too. And
well, I don't think he didn't know where that was. I think he was more referring to the fact that they are completely surrounded and that, I mean, that could have been any one of five guys behind him. To me, it was not a sign of him being, you know, the incompetent in a fight or not knowing what the term meant. I mean, I read that totally different.
Yeah.
I mean, I see where you're coming from on the Grey's Anatomy reference and stuff. I mean, Hawkeye's never been one to, or at least in my recollection, be that topical on the humor and stuff. But frankly, the Hawkeye I'm familiar with and I like wouldn't be dressing up as Ronan to begin with. You know, so... There's some of that. And was it just me, or was there something off with the way the AIM guys looked?
It was off with how everybody looked in this book. I mean, it's, the AIM costumes were not the giant, you know, kind of beehive hat particularly. And they're a little more tapered, but, you know, everything in here didn't look quite right, so...
Yeah.
Those glasses they've got on Mockingbird are terrible.
Well, I mean, it goes back to just the change in costume sensibilities since she was killed off. You know,
I could have taken the costume if they would have at least had like a halfway decent mask on her. You know, but this pair of glasses that look like something a secretary in a 1950s sitcom would be wearing. It's just terrible.
Yeah. Well, overall, I mean, the art was not, like I said, the reason to get this. It was passable art, but, you know, for $3.99, it should have been better art. You know, the other thing that I thought was a little interesting is there was the whole bit with how, you know, are they married or are they not? Because, you know, did the marriage kind of get dissolved when they thought she was dead and whatnot? They didn't bring up the fact that Hawkeye was actually dead for a while. Not thought of dead, but dead. So,
oh, yeah.
That I thought was an interesting omission. So, I mean, I like the characters. I enjoyed, you know, the new Captain America being in here and playing a part. But I think if I didn't have that kind of nostalgia for it, I probably would have been a lot more critical of this issue. Certainly on the art and probably on the writing as well.
And that I almost take my nostalgia for Hawkeye and Mockingbird as one of the reasons why I didn't like it as much as I, you know, it's just, it didn't seem like Hawkeye, and it's just something about it. Again, it didn't sit right with me. As a $2.99 book, this would have been disappointing. As a $3.99 book, this is a don't bother, in my opinion. And I'm not going to be getting any of the other issues of this series. This was my one and only.
So what rating would you give it?
I would give it a 2.
Okay. I'd give it a 3, and a lot of that is because of the price. If this had been a $2.99, I probably would have been tempted to go to a 4. Again, overall, I enjoyed it. Did it have rough spots? Most certainly. And the art was again, chief among that. And, you know, I got to wonder, Bob, if part of the issues you had with this is because of the way Hawkeye was depicted, you know, in terms of facial features and stuff, it didn't really look like Hawkeye. Certainly him being in the Ronin costume didn't help with that any. You know, it...
That's probably contributes to it. I mean, it's like the facial rendering of both Mockingbird and Hawkeye, you know, it, you know, by changing Mockingbird's costume, by having Hawkeye in the Ronin costume, and, you know, I don't know what cover you got. I got the variant edition cover that actually had Hawkeye and Mockingbird on the cover looking like Hawkeye and Mockingbird are supposed to look.
No, I got the direct edition.
Okay. And, you know, it's like I look at that and it's like, well, if that had been on the inside, I would have probably liked this a lot more.
Yeah. I just don't like the Ronin costume. To me, it's not a good-looking costume. It's not the right identity for Hawkeye. And, you know, the whole thing is billed as the reunion of these two characters. And sure, we see a lot of them together, but I don't know. I'm hoping by the end of this, they put these characters in a good position to move forward in the Marvel Universe. You know, I look at how successful, you know, Green Arrow and Black Canary are over at DC, and there's no reason that these two can't be the equivalent at Marvel. But I don't know. I'm going to probably... Actually, I don't know if I'm going to stick with this or not. The $3.99 cover price is a little bit of a deal breaker for me these days.
I would have been really challenged at sticking with this at a $2.99 cover price. Making it $3.99 made it a no-brainer.
Wow.
For me. I just, again, it's like he's in a Ronin costume. And like, put the mask on at least. Jeez. You know, make an attempt.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too different. I mean, the best thing about it to me, on a positive note, was I did like how Bobby had the kind of secret hideout with all the different stuff stashed in it. I mean, she was a highly competent S.H.I.E.L.D. agent for a long time, and this kind of played up that.
Yeah, but to a degree, that kind of, you know, secret cache of equipment and weapons and stuff is almost gotten cliche. I mean, you see that all the time in, you know, TV spy shows and stuff like that.
Because every spy's got one.
Yeah, but...
they've got to.
Yeah.
If she didn't have one, she'd be lame.
It just seemed like it should have been stuff that was older equipment. It seemed to be pretty much, you know, modern-day stuff. And I don't know how long she's been dead in Marvel time, but, you know, I don't know. It should have at least had a layer of dust on it. You know what I mean?
So. Now, I'm not sure how competent the artists were to actually draw a layer of dust, but...
fair point.
You know, it's like guns, knives, arrowheads, a motorcycle, some wigs, and a, you know, Hawkeye bow and arrows. And it wasn't that much high-tech in there.
I don't know, it just didn't feel like something that had been sitting neglected for years on end.
I'll give you that, but I would say that's more of a, you know, a lack of ability on the artist's point.
Yeah. Fair enough. I cannot disagree with that. They really should have gotten a slightly better artist. This is a guy who I think, given some time, will improve and whatnot, but on a $3.99 book, I have higher expectations.
And this seems to be, you know, the second tier of Marvel $3.99 books. I mean, they seem to put their premier books that are going to sell a zillion copies with top-notch creative teams at $3.99. And then they have the kind of low-tier stuff that probably is not going to sell that much anyway, that they figure, well, we're going to make it $3.99, and you know the people who are going to buy it are going to buy it anyway, and we'll make some extra money by having it be $3.99. And, you know, and then there's the stuff that's in the middle that's $2.99.
I am increasingly convinced you're going to beat $3.99 just about across the board by the end of the year. And any exceptions to that are probably going to be higher priced, not lower priced. But I'm perfectly willing to be wrong on that. Shall we move on to our independent book of the week?
Sure.
That is Take a Chance, number 2, from Dable Brothers. And I believe issue 3 is, you know, out with the following shipment of books.
It is indeed. I was at the comic shop yesterday, and number 3 was on the rack.
That's surprising.
Well, when did 1 ship? It shipped far enough long ago that I didn't really remember what had gone on, and there wasn't a lot of reminding me going on in this book. There, you know, so I was a little bit lost for the first 5 or 6 pages of this. Kind of getting back into the flow.
First issue came out on December 17th. So it'd been, 2 or 3
about,
months.
Yeah.
Longer than
it's March, you know, it's March 12th, so almost 3 months.
Well, this came out with the March 5, or March 4 shipment.
Right, but I mean, I'm just saying it's been almost 3 months since I read the first issue.
Well, yeah, to
2.5, you know.
To go from 2.5 to a week with issue 3 is a bad choice all the way around. Because, I mean, sure, they're trying to make up for lost time and catch up, but all that does is cut down the sales time for this second issue. You know. And, you know, as far as the issue went, what I liked about it was I thought it was a interesting, you know, kind of a street-level hero story told in a bit of a more realistic style. I mean, the art's a little rough in places. The story is good. It didn't really overplay the whole realism angle. And it had something that, frankly, I don't know that I see that much in most of the mainstream superhero comics I get these days. We actually have some crime fighting going on. You know, in this case, it's drug dealers, but, I mean, that just seems out of fashion for DC and Marvel heroes.
I thought the art was one of the strong points of this. It's certainly better than the art in that Hawkeye book.
I would say overall, it's a little bit better, but there are a couple of places where I thought the art here was kind of rough, but in different ways than the
It had a vibrance to it. You know, it had a flow, and the thing on reflection maybe that bugged me about the new Avengers reunion book was it was stiff.
That's fair, and I think that's a good way to describe it. You know, this...
There's a little bit of roughness, yeah. You know, it's like there's some things that could be better. You know, there's some anatomical things and some page layout, but there's a liveliness to it, you know, that
there's
I liked.
A better sense of storytelling style. There's, I think, a lot more story on some of these pages. You know, there are a couple of pages here where they've got, you know, over a dozen panels or whatnot, yet it doesn't feel crowded or convoluted. There are also a couple of pages that have, you know, just a ton of dialogue, yet it you know, the art works with that.
Now that you point that out, I'm just flipped it. There's a page here that's got 15 panels on it.
Is that the one where she's getting out of bed?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I was at when I caught, yeah.
Like, dang, okay, you know, it's like, how often do you see that, you know?
I think a lot of artists couldn't handle that much.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's ones where, you know, go to that page with the 15 panels and go back, like, actually, I guess it's further back, like 5 pages prior to that where she's back in the club. There's the one page where she's coming out of the ladies' room.
Right.
That particular panel, I think, is kind of rough. It's just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, know. that panel is. And certainly there are panels here and there like that that just seem like, you know, they didn't do a job. But then again, you know, look at that little inset panel on the same page over to the right.
Yeah, it's well done.
I mean, he does a nice job on the faces in that one. So, you know, it... The pluses outweigh the minuses for me and the art on this, and the storytelling flow worked nicely for me. And again, I go back to that other one, and it just kind of sat there on the page for me. It did nothing to grab me.
No, and I think that, again, that's a good way to put it. This is, you know, better art in terms of the storytelling and in terms of the sense of movement, of action, of the body language of the characters. In that respect, it's definitely, you know, better than the new Avengers reunion issue. Overall, I mean, this is, to me, kind of standard indie superhero fare. This is the kind of book that, could it fit into a Marvel or DC universe? Yeah, probably. It's got a bit more of a street-level feel to it in a way that I think kind of works. But because it's kind of, you know, out there on its own, you know, if this makes it to issue 12, I will be shocked. Just because, I mean...
Oh, it's a limited series, so...
Yeah, but, I mean, even if it weren't, it's the kind of thing that has a limited lifespan, nature of the beast.
Well, what I'm curious about, you know, with... this kind of book, since this author, C.E. Murphy, has written a lot of different books, you know, if they can do the 5-issue arcs of this and get them into trade form and have them sitting in the bookstore along with the, I mean, just on the one page here at the end of the story, they've got like 9 novels that she's written. You know, sitting here, and, you know, if you can put this on the shelf near these 9 paperback novels, you know, might someone say, oh, I like this author, I've read, and these are series novels, right? So the people who read this kind of novel, this serialized novel, they're kind of in the habit of picking up the new ones as they come out also, which is almost like a, you know, a comic reader. You know, you slap this thing on the shelf next to that, you might get some decent sales out of that, you know, crossover.
I hope so, but, you know, if they do a second miniseries of this, you know, I'll be a little surprised. Because, you know, it's the kind of thing that because it's not from Marvel and DC, a lot of people are just going to ignore it if they even see it on store shelves.
Well, I think that what's going to make or break this... And I certainly don't think they're going to go back to press on a second series anytime soon. But if you see a second series on this, it'll be an indication that when they collected it and put it in the bookstore next to those novels, they sold.
Yeah, and I agree. It's going to be in the bookstores, not in the comic book stores, that it would do that.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing. You put it out as the comic book, you know, as long as you're kind of breaking even on it or so, it's a good way to make up some of your money while you're building up the contents for the graphic album that'll go in the bookstore.
Yeah.
And Vertigo does that.
I mean, overall, I enjoyed this. I actually like seeing a superhero, not that she has powers, but the costumed hero, you know, going and fighting crime. I hope this is doing well for them. I hope they do well in the bookstores, and I hope they move forward with this. But, you know, realistically speaking, I think a lot of people are unfortunately going to ignore it because, like I said, it's not a Marvel and DC book, and that's just a shame.
The cover was really nice.
Yeah, I like the cover.
Scott Clark, you know, the guy who did the cover did a very nice job on it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you certainly could do worse than this one. I mean, another one, though, $3.99 for the 22 pages. Comparing the two, I feel like I got more for my money from Take a Chance than I got from the New Avengers Reunion.
I would agree with that, too. I gave this a 3 like I gave New Avengers also a 3, but really the art was stronger here. The character, I think, was a bit better. But, you know, it's also a question of, you know, to a degree, I just don't have the attachment here. Like, I've got, you know, 20 years backstory with Hawkeye and Mockingbird. So, I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, and I gave this a 3 also. I liked it more than New Avengers. And, you know, that was, they did a nice job. In fact, this issue, I was kind of on the fence after I read the first issue of this series. This one was much stronger, I thought, than the first issue.
I would agree with that. I thought the first issue was a little shaky. And really, I don't think you needed to remember anything of the first issue to understand this issue. I thought they did fairly well on the level of accessibility. So I was happy with that.
Well, I kind of got right into the story, and I was, like, having a hard time remembering the first issue. I remember I wasn't that enthused about it. That's mostly what I remembered. And maybe what I was not remembering was just indicative of the fact that it just wasn't, you know, much there to be remembered. But they hit their stride with this issue. They did a nice job.
Yeah.
I also, it seems like, and I could be wrong on this, but it seems like this is a new story for this comic by the author of the books, as opposed to just an adaptation of.
I'm thinking it's even a new character, but I'm not positive about that.
Yeah, because I don't see in any of the books that they're advertising, Chance does not appear to be that. You know, it appears to be a new character by the author. And C.E. Murphy is, in fact, I'm assuming it's female, is writing this herself. So, you know, I think maybe that first issue was kind of familiarizing herself with the comics form. And, you know, the second issue just shows that she kind of took to it pretty quickly. Maybe she got some kind of a critique on that first issue and kind of retooled it a little bit, but this was done pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was a really small week for me. And smallest I think I've had as far as I can remember. I got a total of 8 comics and 1 hardcover. Which, yeah, I know there are listeners out there, it's like, who get that much on a, you know, and that's normal for them. For me, that's, you know, a third to, you know, a quarter or a fifth of what I would normally get in a week.
There were some good books out this week. I had 20 comics myself, and War of Kings, loved it.
Didn't get it.
War of Kings #1, I loved it. That thing, you know, Abnett and Lanning doing space stuff, it was really good. And that book, that's one that was $3.99 that I felt was worth it because I was entertained from start to finish. I mean, it had really nice art, good writing, good story, good characters, good characterization. The people were acting like they should have acted. And, you know, I had a character I didn't care for in it, who's Vulcan, who I kind of like because, you know, they're setting him up to get his ass kicked big time by Black Bolt and the Inhuman royal family before this series is over. So I'm looking forward to that. I got another number one that came out, The Strange Adventures, you know, more of the Jim Starlin DC space stuff. If you like that sort of thing, you'll like this issue. It's just, you know, more of that. It was, you know, nicely done. I really liked the Dark Reign Fantastic Four. That was very nicely done. I thought the characterizations of the FF was more in line with the way the FF should be acting than, you know, has been happening in the regular mainstream FF book. So Jonathan Hickman, very nice job on that one. Agents Atlas, really good. Daredevil continues to be good.
That one I actually got.
Yeah. What else? Secret Six.
Got that one.
That was okay.
Yeah. The Birds of Prey, I mean, were in there, and it's like, where does that timeline fit with them kind of disbanding or whatever in their own book?
Yeah.
That's one that might be fun to go through, you know, for somebody as a kind of a Where's Waldo sort of a thing, because there were a lot of cameos of lame, obscure villains.
Yeah. A couple of those pages, there were lots of, you know, that come out of the woodwork in that one. Terror Titans kind of ended kind of weak, I thought.
I was happy with the end. It answered the basic questions I wanted answered. It left things, you know, kind of open for the Terror Titans team going forward, which I had kind of expected. It would have been, why spend six issues kind of putting together a villainous team of characters or whatnot and then just, you know, dispose of them at the end? They answered who was Star Spangled Kid. That was something I was curious about, so I was happy with that. I think Static didn't get as much on panel time as he should have in that issue. But, you know, overall, I thought it was good.
Yeah, I was less enthused. Maybe it's just in general, and this is probably why villain books don't typically, you know, stay around very long. But I just don't relate that much to the characters in it. What else? Jonah Hex continues to be good. You don't get that.
Only two other comics I got were Echo and Trinity.
No Secret Warriors?
No. I've had to cut way back. I mean, there's a ton of this stuff I would have, with the exception of Jonah Hex, just about everything else you mentioned, I would have gotten.
Right.
But, you know, there's that whole, you know, mortgage payment, you know, groceries, yeah. Those things.
I'll tell you, before you buy New Avengers, the Reunion number 2, pick up an issue of Agents of Atlas or Secret Warriors or something like that. They're much better. Secret Warriors was good. I liked it.
Cool.
So that was all I got to reading so far.
Well, I obviously had time to read all 8 of my comics because there's only the 5 other ones what we talked about.
That's true.
And then the hardcover I got was the Life and Death of Pharaoh Ladd. And most of those issues, if not all of them, I think I've read in the past. But, you know, hardcover for it, it was worth getting. But, I mean, that was well over half the dollar total for my shipment this week. So.
Right. Well, I read 14 of the 20 books that I got, so... That's pretty good for me.
Yeah.
It's only Thursday, so.
Yeah, we're recording this a little bit early, just to, that way I don't have to wake up early Saturday morning after the previews call we had Last Friday, this past Friday night, as you listen to this, but tomorrow night, as we record this.
Yeah.
This whole time shifting thing.
Yeah. You know, the hardcovers I got the Kabuki hardcover, Superman Brainiac hardcover, and Savage Sword of Conan trade paperback volume 5.
Cool.
More Savage Sword of Conan reminded me of why I loved this so much when I was a teenager, because there was like nudity in the Savage Sword of Conan book, because it was black and white, newsstand, you know, whatever. I don't know. It was a magazine size, so it didn't go through the comics code or something.
They're going to do a Dark Horse is going to do a crossover, 6-issue crossover series with Conan.
With who?
Gru the Wanderer.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah. Sergio talks about that at his thing all the time.
I heard about it from Stan Sakai at Staple this past weekend. First I'd heard of it. And it's like, okay, that'll be interesting to see how that works. And they're going to have Sergio do the group part, and I forget who do the other part. And it's like, could be cool. Fun stuff.
Yeah, they've been talking about that one for about the last two and a half years. Whenever I go to Stan, Sergio, and Mark show at one of these conventions, they're talking about how they're eventually going to do that.
It was sounding like it was coming up in the sooner rather than later time frame, but, you know, we'll see. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
It does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Batman Battle for the Cowl number 1 from DC, The Immortal Iron Fist number 23 from Marvel, and The Life and Times of Savior 28 number 1 from IDW Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.